From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, a shooting rampage in Herkimer and the legal debate over guns and safety. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on what looks like another on-time, even early state budget, and will examine the Energy Highway Blueprint. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Legal debate over guns and the safety of New York's citizens continues at a fever pitch in the wake of the Herkimer horror this week, where four people were shot and two left critically injured. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The central New York tragedy and Wednesday's refusal by a state judge to block New York's tough new gun law have kicked the gun control issue into overtime. A Siena College poll recently found New York voters, by a 2-to-1 margin, support the New York Secure Ammunition and Firearms Enforcement Act, which included a broader ban on assault weapons and lower limits on the capacity of magazines. Downstate Assemblywoman Michelle Schimmel is a staunch supporter of the New York Safe Act and a strong proponent of background checks. She says her heart goes out to Herkimer.
And once again, the fact that it's at Herkimer County, which is essentially ground zero, because of its proximity to Remington, is particularly ironic and particularly telling, and it's very, very, very sad. Every time I hear of a killing, any killing, it breaks my heart. And hopefully, with the New York law, it will be somewhat eradicated. I'm actually going to Washington, D.C. tomorrow, while I'm leaving tonight, to lobby congressmen and senators to do something on a federal level as well, so they can copy New York State.
The New York Safe Act was pushed by Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat who had sought the changes after high-profile shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, and Webster in Monroe County, New York. Assemblyman Jim Tedisco, Republican of Glenville in the 112th District, champions Second Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution.
With this bill that was rushed to judgment by the governor with a so-called message of necessity, which really is a message of political expediency, it's not going to impact situations like this. What's going to impact situations like this is trying to pinpoint these individuals who have mental health problems, making sure they're getting treatment, and making sure, to the best of our ability, they don't have access to dangerous weapons.
Since New York passed the SAFE Act in January, 34 counties have passed resolutions opposing it, all of which are north of New York City. Tedisco points out that it's a tough proposition to get harmful weapons out of the hands of criminals without infringing on the rights of people who own guns for personal protection.
And I agree with the governor and what he had to say today. Sometimes there's no piece of legislation, there's no type of preparationness that can take place to stop a madman from doing the types of things we've seen here in Newtown and in some other areas. But we have to continue to pursue a policy that does make us safer, but not a policy that creates a false sense of well-being and maybe endangers our ability to protect ourselves by banning some weapons, which really don't illustrate they're a large part of the have a problem.
Many law enforcement officials say they are not convinced the SAFE Act will make the streets any safer, and they believe the bigger problem to be the illegal handguns already on the streets. Charlie Samuels with Saratogians for Gun Safety applauds state and national efforts to pass gun control laws.
We have an epidemic of gun violence in this country, and unfortunately, these kind of things are probably going to continue unless we make some changes in gun control.
The Herkimer incident hasn't affected plans for another gun show scheduled to be held this weekend in the Spa City. Mark Baker is president of the Saratoga Springs City Center Authority.
Interestingly, we are not getting overwhelmed with complaints and responses from people that are concerned about the gun show. In fact, we have heard less and less comment on it. If we do have some folks this coming weekend that are on the street expressing a differing point of view, certainly that is their right. We welcome them to express themselves in a civil and certainly courteous manner.
Charlie Samuel says his group will be on the scene and plan to demonstrate on the streets.
We don't want the gun show in our town. Please don't bring your guns to town.
The gun debate is far from resolved as gun crime continues and other issues, including gun insurance and micro-stamping, are likely to be scrutinized more closely in this year's legislative session in Albany.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The New York State Legislature is fast-tracking the budget process as they try to reach final agreements and pass bills next week. The negotiations drew protesters to the Capitol who are demanding that the budget include a minimum wage increase to $9 an hour with automatic future increases for inflation. We get more now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The 50 or so demonstrators directed their ire toward Governor Cuomo and Senate co-leader Jeff Klein, who they say aren't doing enough to convince Republicans in the Senate to go along with a proposal to raise the minimum wage to $9 an hour.
Hey, Klein! At least nine!
Senator Klein, a Democrat who led a breakaway faction of Democrats to join a coalition government with the Senate Republicans, has been attempting to compromise with the Senate GOP. Republicans have called a minimum wage increase a job killer. Klein ultimately agreed to a plan to increase it gradually over a three-year period instead, without naming any specific amount. Mark Dunlay with Hunger Action Network says that's not good enough. He questioned Senator Klein's motives for forming a coalition with the Republicans in the first place.
And when Jeff Klein stood and said, "This is not about patronage. This is not about greed. This is not about personal power. This is about doing something different for the good of the voters of New York State." And yet, the one issue he talked about, by me becoming co-majority leader, we're going to get a minimum wage. It has still not been increased.
Dunlay, who demonstrated with other protesters outside Senator Klein's office door, says food pantries and soup kitchens in New York feed 3 million people a year. 40% of clients have jobs, but they don't pay enough to make ends meet.
They don't make enough money to feed their families. They have to choose between paying their landlord, paying the utility company, paying the medical bill, or putting food on their table.
Senator Klein was asked about the protesters following a budget conference committee meeting.
I was just at my office. I didn't see any protesters.
The senator and other legislative leaders met several times with Governor Cuomo throughout the day, but offered few details of their talks, a sign that a final deal is close. Lawmakers agreed to divide up $550 million in additional spending for education, health, and other items. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver says that doesn't mean the legislature is spending $500 million more than Governor Cuomo wants, though. Silver, along with Senate GOP leader Dean Skelos, say they have instead moved money around, but they couldn't name the total increase in state spending.
I can't tell you right now.
We are staying below the 2% cap.
Schools will receive $290 million more dollars under the agreement, but lawmakers have not yet convinced Governor Cuomo to agree to restore around $250 million cut to New York City schools after they failed to meet the governor's deadline for a teacher evaluation plan. There was also discontent with some of the other restorations. The governor and leaders allotted $40 million additional dollars to service providers for the developmentally disabled, but supporters objected, saying that's only one-third of the $120 million originally cut by Governor Cuomo. The newest state senator, Cecilia Katchik, demanded an explanation at a budget conference committee meeting.
I know the Democratic conference totally supports the full restoration of the $120 million, and I assume the Republican majority is concurring with that. So I don't understand why we're not at that $120 million, and could the chairs explain why we only have $40 million?
She was told that negotiations are not yet done, and the final number could still change. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, another terrible tragedy. This time it hits New York and central New York, Herkimer County. And this just after we see the passing of one of the toughest gun laws in the nation in New York, the SAFE law. This week, a state judge refused to block a challenge to the law for being passed too quickly. We've even seen the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs weighing in, saying they won't comply with a provision of New York's gun law that requires mental health providers to report potentially dangerous individuals to state authorities. Adding this all up, a pretty amazing week and one more incident of gun violence.
Well, David, we're just going to have to get our arms around this problem of guns. There's a certain irony that in central New York is the Remington factory right there and putting out, guns. And I think that to some degree, we are prisoners of the idea that so many people who feel so passionately about this have been ratcheting up the rhetoric. They have been saying, for example, that the law was passed too fast using something called a message of necessity. Messages of necessity are supposed to be used only when you have a real crisis. Well, of course, they sued and the judge said, no, this is legitimate. Why? Because we have a crisis of too many guns and too many people being killed. And if it was your child or your family or your wife or your husband, you would be in great grief right now and saying, why are we allowing this to continue? Now, there are many gun people out there who truly believe that this is the first step in the government taking everybody's guns away and being oppressive. But we haven't seen that. Of course, in upstate New York, where Governor Cuomo has a particular problem, I mean, he's getting more and more popular, according to these Marist and Siena polls, downstate, but not upstate. Upstate, he's actually losing some favor. So he showed up at this shooting. It was the right thing to do. And I think that the point was not missed by everybody that this didn't need to be happening. In the meantime, along comes the folks at the Veterans Administration, and they say, look, we do therapy with our veterans who come back. We are not going to report them if they say something that in the course of a therapeutic session that might be considered to be dangerous. We're not going to allow our people to do it. Well, they're not alone. The American Psychological Association and so many other people have raised some eyebrows about this and have said, we don't understand. You know, therapy is meant to build trust between a therapist and the patient. And if, in fact, every time the patient says something that might be a little extreme, we have to cover our behinds and go and report them, that is going to destroy the therapy. You can only imagine what the therapeutic relationship would happen in a case like that. On the other hand, I truly believe that most, well, for a better word, shrinks, understand what their responsibilities are. And I can't believe that if somebody came in and said, I've got a gun at home and I'm going to kill somebody, that there isn't some way in which that psychiatrist or social worker or a psychologist would let somebody know about it because it's just the right thing to do. But to tell them that it's mandatory, I said when they passed the SAFE Act that that was a bad idea. It is a bad idea. And I think the feds are right to put a stop to it.
Alan, you and I have been together for a long time now, and it seems like each year when we began together, there was always a late budget. They couldn't get the agreement on time. Mm-hmm. One house blamed the other. The governor blamed the Senate. Finger pointing, and it would always seem to stretch past the April 1st deadline, sometimes into July or later. And now we see the last few budgets coming in on time, and now all the leaders are saying, you know, we're going to have probably a budget maybe by next week.
Well, you know, I'm a teacher of political science for maybe 40 years. I've been doing this. I've been telling people about what goes on in the legislature. One of the worst things that happens is that people don't know anything and they begin to fixate on one or two little things. Well, one of the fixations has always been on the budget. They've always said, look, our side is right. We're not going to budge. And one of the reasons they do that is to indicate to their clients, in other words, if they're the Republicans, to the business community, and if they're the Democrats, to the more progressive community, that they're fighting for them. Well, it turns out, of course, that people just set a pox on both of your houses because you can't even get the most essential thing done, the budget. Along comes Andrew Cuomo. Now, Cuomo, I've reminded you before, I'm going to remind everybody again, now owns both houses of the legislature. He's a Democrat, but he wants the Republicans in power. We've known this from the very beginning. He didn't veto the self-serving apportionment bill, redistricting bill, and that was a clear clue to me and to everybody else that he wanted the Republicans to stay in power. Well, there are now fewer Republicans than there are Democrats in the state Senate. The only thing that stands behind Dean Skelos, the Republican leader, being out on his behind is Cuomo. Because if Cuomo pulls in the four or now five group that are being called the, quote, traitors to the Democratic Party who have made a deal with the Republicans and says cut it out, then they're going to be a Democratic majority and it's all over. Skelos knows that to be in the minority in New York State is the worst possible fate anybody can go through. First of all, he's got a lot of old guys at his conference, and the minute they're in the minority, they're gone. They're going to leave. And so he doesn't want to do that. To put it mildly, he has to do whatever the governor says. If the governor says, get an on-time budget, he's going to get an on-time budget. If the governor says, get a gun deal done in the middle of the night, he and his group, who are largely opposed to this, are going to say, okay, how far do we have to jump? And finally, these guys woke up one day and said, you know, everybody hates us because we can't do the budget. So we'll do the budget. Period.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Late last year, the Cuomo administration laid out its agenda. To address New York's future energy requirements. The Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond examines the goal of the plan known as the Energy Highway Blueprint.
It's easy to miss this red brick building. It's on a residential street outside of Albany. There's no sign telling drivers that the flow of all the electricity in New York State is being controlled inside. The organization at the controls is the New York Independent System Operators, or NYISO. They're a nonprofit created after New York's energy markets were opened up in the 90s.
Somebody once described us as kind of like the air traffic controller for electricity, and that's actually a pretty good description.
That's NYISO spokesperson Dave Flanagan. 11,000 miles of transmission lines and more than 300 power plants are monitored from six computer consoles at NYISO's control center. Flanagan says the biggest challenge is making sure power gets to New York City.
We have really a surplus of electricity, but we are limited in some cases in our ability to get the electricity from areas where we have those surpluses to areas where the demand is greatest.
Flanagan says bottlenecks around Albany are the main issue. Most power travels from western New York eastward to Albany and then south down the Hudson Valley into New York City. Often around Albany, there's just too much power trying to get to New York City. That means higher prices in the city and a reduced market for upstate producers. Flanagan says a mixture of expanded transmission and new power sources would address the problem. That's where Governor Cuomo's Energy Highway Blueprint comes in. It's a series of proposals leading to an estimated $5.7 billion in investment in the next 10 years to increase power transmission and generation. Donna DiCostanzo, a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, applauds the parts of the plan that focus on clean energy.
We need to ensure that what's being brought down from our transmission lines is clean.
The blueprint calls for $250 million in renewable energy contracts and $35 million more in transmission upgrades to connect new sources to the state's grid. DiCostanzo says renewable energy and efficiency upgrades could supply enough power to replace Indian Point, the nuclear power plant 40 miles north of New York City.
It's clear that we do need to do something about Indian Point. When a natural disaster, many of which we've seen in the last couple of years, including an earthquake, flooding, and tornadoes, could shut the plant down or trigger a disaster.
Closing Indian Point is not included in the energy highway, but Governor Cuomo has argued for its closure since 2011. But Jerry Kremer, chairman of the New York Affordable Reliable Electricity Alliance, says the governor's plan would be most useful if closing Indian Point was left off the table.
The whole idea for the energy highway is to find ways to improve transmission and to get new sources and not to throw a monkey wrench into an existing source.
He also criticizes a separate transmission project called the Champlain Hudson Power Express, which would bring power from Canada directly into New York City.
The problem with Champlain Express is that it's like taking the power from Canada and having one long extension cord into New York City. It creates no jobs.
That project is still waiting for approval. Kremer argues the focus should primarily be on carrying additional upstate produced power into the city. Some of the projects included in the energy highway are just starting this year, and many will run past 2018. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richmond for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1311. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.